Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Regina. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's program. And this program is done in conjunction with Longevity Foundation. And it's a program on non-small cell lung cancer, biomarker testing and treatment trends. And it's part two of living with non-small cell lung cancer. And today's program is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Inc., and Regeneron, and a grant from Genentech. And we want to thank them for their support of this program today. Now, before we move on, I just would like to say a few words about the participants on the program today. We have over 203 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the world, from all of the United States, actually, first of all, from both urban, rural, and suburban areas. And we also have international participants from Afghanistan, Australia, Brazil, Canada, India, Pakistan, the Philippines, United Kingdom. So it's really a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us to learn more about non-small cell lung cancer and biomarker testing and treatment. And It's really wonderful to have a global audience today on this call as well, and I am very appreciative that you've all chosen to join the call today. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker, and our first speaker is Dr. Mark Criss. Dr. Criss is the William and Joy Rain Chair in Thoracic Oncology, Attending Physician, Thoracic Oncology Service at Department of Medicine, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Professor of Medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College. And Dr. Criss will be addressing an overview of lung cancer in the context of COVID, seasonal flu, and RSV, definition of genomics and biomarker testing, the difference between genomics and genetics, and the role of biomarker testing in the treatment of non-small cell lung cancer. It is my pleasure to share this program with my esteemed colleague, Dr. Criss.
Thank you, Carolyn. Again, thank you for having me, and to everyone on the call, thanks for joining us today. I'm very pleased to have this chance to talk to you because it's been a truly amazing time for the field of lung cancers. We have made so much progress in the last few years, and really for the first time, we have been able to show that the lives of patients with virtually any stage and type of lung cancer have been improved by our modern treatments. And when you look at the overall statistics about how people with lung cancer are doing in the United States, the answer is unequivocally better. And the answer is, and the reason rather is that it's because of the therapies that we have. We also can even say the word cure at this point. Cure is something that we sort of hesitated to talk about. It happened sometimes with surgery or with radiation, very rarely in patients with metastatic disease, but now we've actually seen patients that have metastatic lung cancer that can be cured with our modern therapies. A practical consequence of this, though, is that it's gotten a lot more complicated. Again, I like to say that my catchphrase, it's better for persons with lung cancer, but it's much harder for doctors. And I'll add to that, too, it's harder for patients. I ask you to be patient with us, please understand that you cannot possibly be expected to know all the things that you have thrown at you now in treating lung cancer. I think, you know, Dr. Sabari and Dr. Sue will be talking to you about much more specific things. But you really have to go to the people who are your caregivers and the medical caregivers and work with them to learn about these things. A quick word about genomics that's sort of the easy answer. It's all about DNA, and it's changes in the DNA that drive lung cancer. And the only way that you can obtain the results about DNA testing is to test tissue or to test blood, and we'll talk more about that. Biomarker, and I'll really spend the most time talking like this, the definition, it's something that you can measure. But more importantly, it is a defining characteristic in your case of the cancer that you're fighting. So a biomarker is something that is vital to the cancer, and understanding it and using it as a way to choose the best therapy is what we do now and provides the best chance of benefit. I first want to make a couple words about pathology. I know people hear that, oh, there's a spot on my scan, it's lung cancer. The truth is there's really only one way to diagnose lung cancer, and that's an examination of tissue by a pathologist. A pathologist can look at tissue sections, things like your liver or your lung. They can also look at individual cells. They can put tiny needles into the body, take out cells, and look at them under the microscope. It's truly amazing. They can look at fluid that collects under the lungs or around the heart or in the abdominal cavity and look at those cancer cells and make very, very accurate diagnoses. They do this primarily by looking at these cells. They're extraordinarily trained that they can see these cells, sometimes only one cell, and say, yes, it's cancer, and then start to define the characteristics of it. They also supplement their understanding of the cancer cell by doing so-called immunohistochemistry tests. So they take some cancer cells, put them on a glass slide, and they subject it to various proteins that are the products of the various genes that drive the cancer. So some common ones that you may have heard already or will hear, things like HER2. HER2 is a protein that defines the growth of certain kinds of lung cancer. ALK, A-L-K, is another one where you do these immunohistochemistry tests. And probably the most common one is that so-called PD-1 or PD-L1. And that is a test on tissue or cells that tries to estimate how sensitive a tumor might be to an immunotherapy. A couple of words about this. Dr. Sue and Dr. Sabar are going to talk more about liquid biopsy. I'm not going to do that here. But the DNA can be retrieved from tumor tissue. It can also be found in the bloodstream, and we now have technologies to do that, so-called liquid biopsy. And Dr. Sue and Dr. Sabar are going to be talking about that a bit more. One confession, I guess, we have to make is that our testing, it is not perfect. You know, there are pros and cons to everything. This idea of a liquid biopsy sounds like, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. You don't have to have a biopsy, you get a fast result. Unfortunately, that the testing is not as precise as the tissue testing. About 1 out of 4 times when something is present in the tissue, it's not present in the blood. So that's still very, very helpful, because if you find it in the blood, you can go to the bank on it. But if it's not there, you have to go further and have to go tissue and go for tissue. And I know how disappointing that is. The last thing on earth you want to hear is you need another biopsy. And I know at our hospital, you know, scheduling the biopsy, getting the biopsy, waiting for results is just very, really, very, very tough. However, I hope you'll finish the day today and hear that we are using this information, and it's vital to our choice of therapies. And despite the delay, you just we have to find a way about it. Now, that said, you can't lose communication with persons while you're waiting for these test results to come back. And by the way, we have treatments that we can recommend without these sophisticated test results. So it's critical that you work with your docs during this time, but try to understand that there is delay associated with doing these tests. For the tissue test, it takes everywhere from 2 to 4 weeks once the molecular pathologist has the tissue in their hands. For the blood, it's a little bit better. It's probably 1 to 2 weeks, again, once that tissue hits the lab. But there are quite a few steps to get the blood from your arm to the lab, to get the tissue from your biopsy specimen to the lab. So there are more delays there. Bottom line is, delay is unfortunate. The people caring for you have to explain why it's in your interest to do that. They have to keep an eye on you during the time you're waiting for the results. If there's a change in your condition, we need a new plan. Sometimes we can't wait for these results. I'm going to finish now with how we use these results. In 2024, cancers that are small, and I won't define that here, confined to the lung, these cancers are best treated with surgery or radiation. And they can those modalities can cure that cancer. However, if the cancers are large, if the cancers are growing into an adjacent structure, if the cancers have left the lung, we always give additional treatment, so-called systemic treatments. In 2024, the first step is to do this molecular testing on tissue or blood. And if one of these, we call them drivers, are present, and Dr. Savari will give you some specifics in a few minutes. If one of those is present, you kind of go after that. You give the best treatment based on the presence of that driver. If you don't have that driver, then, and which is the majority of patients, we have very effective combinations of chemotherapy and immunotherapy that can not just help the cancer, but can potentially cure the cancer as well. Well, one final comment about vaccines. One of the best accomplishments of modern medicine is the presence of a vaccine. You know, nothing would be better than to be able to prevent disease. And folks from my generation knew what a horrible burden things like polio were for people, for families, communities. And to see that go away is just amazing. I think for folks that have lung cancer, there's a trilogy of vaccinations that you really should have. The first is the seasonal flu vaccine. Every year the flu virus modifies. You need a new vaccine every year. Our other respiratory virus, the COVID, also keeps changing. And I think when it ultimately is going to get into a more routine situation with the COVID, you're going to be getting a yearly COVID vaccination. So please, you would never tell your doc, oh, I had a flu shot last year, because last year's flu shot doesn't work for this year's flu. The same is true for COVID. And the last one is the new kid on the block, RSV. It's another respiratory virus. I know I've seen it in my population, and the other docs on the phone today may comment on it as well. It's a one-time shot and worth getting, particularly when people's lungs are at risk from cancer or from other lung diseases. So thanks for letting me speak today. We're so excited about the progress that we have made, and I want you to be encouraged that there are many, many treatments that can be used to get you where you want to be, get the cancer under control, and hopefully do even better than that. And I think all of us are committed to not resting on our laurels here, but to come up with even better therapies. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Chris. That was just a wonderful presentation, and you really set the stage for today's program. So I thank you for that. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is going to be Joshua Savari. And Dr. Savari is attending physician, thoracic medical oncology, Assistant Professor of Medicine, NYU Langone Health, Palmetto Cancer Center. And Dr. Savari will be addressing specific examples of how biomarker testing may inform treatment decisions precision medicine in non-small cell lung cancer, and current research in genomics and non-small cell lung cancer liquid biopsies. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Sabari.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and I wanted to thank those who joined the call today, as well as the Longevity Foundation and the Cancer Care Connect, and in particular, Dr. Mark Chris, who trained me and developed this passion within me for the treatment of lung cancer, but also the treatment of a human. So the idea here in folks who are diagnosed with lung cancer is that we have made tremendous strides over the last 10, 15, 20 years. And as Dr. Chris had mentioned, 20 years ago, we were only thinking about chemotherapy as a modality for patients with newly diagnosed metastatic lung cancer. Here in 2024, we have multiple new modalities of treatment, and we'll really discuss how we select the best treatment, as well as novel approaches that are being investigated through clinical trials. So, when you hear the diagnosis of lung cancer, first and foremost, I want you to understand that you're not alone, that there are many people who have this diagnosis. It's the third most common cancer diagnosed in the United States. And actually, globally, it's the most common type of cancer that we identify. And because of that, we know a lot and have done a lot of work studying this disease. Over the last 10 years, there's been a revolution in understanding the biology, particularly the DNA changes in your cancer, to help us guide the correct therapy. So we heard from Dr. Chris about the staging of where the cancer starts and where the cancer goes in the body. If the cancer starts and stays in the lung, we refer to that as an early stage cancer, and we're generally thinking about surgery or radiation as a curative intent therapy. But if the cancer started in the lung and unfortunately learned to travel to other places in the body, like the liver, for example, or the brain, meaning it learned to travel through the bloodstream, we would call that an advanced or stage 4 cancer. And those types of cancers are treatable, but they're not curable, meaning we can't get rid of them with surgery or radiation. And the key here is to really use a systemic therapy or therapy that can get all throughout the body. So there are three main types of systemic therapies in 2024, and we're sort of growing on this, or we're building upon this. But historically, chemotherapy or conventional chemotherapy kills cancer cells, but can also, unfortunately, kill normal cells. More recently, we've seen the approval of immunotherapy starting in 2016. And I remember in Dr. Chris's clinic in 2014 and 15, seeing the dramatic responses with immunotherapy in patients. And we see that every day now in our clinic, people living longer and doing better with immunotherapy. And the third type of systemic treatment is targeted therapy. And targeted therapy could be pills, but they can also be infusions, and they're specifically targeting a mutation or a gene mutation, an abnormality in the DNA. Not what we inherited from mom and dad and have a risk of passing on, but something that we've acquired from the environment. And I want to get on my soapbox just for a moment here. When we think about lung cancer, it's important to really remove the stigma. All you need is lungs to develop lung cancer. There are people that have smoked who develop lung cancer. There are people who've never smoked who develop lung cancer. And I think removing the stigma will allow us to better identify and treat cancer in people. Now, how do we put together what the right treatment is for an individual patient? And that's where biomarkers come into play. And biomarkers are specifically markers in the cancer, in the cells, that will help guide us to the best possible treatment. There are predictive biomarkers, meaning that will predict how well treatment will work. And then there are prognostic biomarkers that will tell us generally, agnostic of the treatment, how well people will do with treatment. So let's focus on the predictive biomarkers, and we're going to focus here on precision medicine. So revolutionary, about 20 years ago now, we started doing next generation sequencing, where we deeply study the tumor to identify what is causing that cancer to tick. What are the gene abnormalities or mutations in the cancer. And if we can identify that mutation, we've developed many treatments. There's over 11 different gene mutations, driver mutations we call them, that are actionable, that we can match patients to targeted therapy. So my teaching is always that if we find a driver mutation, we should select the targeted therapy, and we'll talk about a few targets. If we don't identify a driver mutation, we then fall back on that PD-L1 testing. That's an immunohistochemistry test. It's a test that we measure on the surface of the cancer cell, predicting how likely immunotherapy will work. So if you did genetic testing and we didn't identify a mutation, that's when I look at the PD-L1 testing. If the PD-L1 testing is high, we may be able to get away with immunotherapy alone as an effective strategy. If the PD-L1 is low, telling us that the likelihood of immunotherapy working on its own is also low, I generally recommend combining chemotherapy and immunotherapy. And as Dr. Chris mentioned, it's critical that we wait for the correct testing to result, and it's painful. It's painful for patients. It's also painful and anxiety-provoking for us as physicians, as healthcare teams, because we want to give patients the best possible treatment. But if we don't know the driver mutation, we can't select the correct therapy. So let's really dive into the precision medicine field of targeted mutations. So we mentioned that there were about 11 different driver mutations, and one of the more common ones that we see in practice is a mutation in a gene called EGFR, or epidermal growth factor receptor. Interestingly, in my clinic, I see it as high as 25 to 30% of my patients. In China, for example, upwards of 50%, and some areas in the Midwest, about 10-12%, and it has to do with smoking status, exposure status, and this mutation, originally identified now over 20-25 years ago, has become very, very actionable. So we have multiple FDA-approved regimens, actually three in the frontline setting, as well as over 20 different trials being evaluated in the later line setting. And the beauty generally with targeted therapy is not only does it have a very high likelihood of working at shrinking the tumor and allowing people to live longer and live better, but overall these are generally better tolerated, meaning they don't have broad side effects of chemotherapy, such as fatigue and nausea and potentially hair loss. The side effects for these types of medicines are usually related to blocking the gene itself, so EGFR. So you may have heard of a medicine called osimertinib, which is one of the standard of cares in this setting. More recently, we've developed a medicine called amivantamab, an EGFR and MET bispecific antibody. Sounds like science fiction, but these are infusions and could be in the future injections of medicines targeting the EGFR gene. And we have many other treatment options available in clinical investigation. So please, when you're talking to your healthcare team, ask them, what is my biomarker? And are there clinical trials available for my biomarker? As this will allow you to have multiple different opportunities for therapy. I want to briefly talk about one of the other common mutations that I study called KRAS, K-R-A-S, which is a really important signaling sort of node, a pathway that allows cells to grow. This mutation can occur in upwards of 30 to 35% of people. We more commonly see it in people who have smoked, and historically it's been called undruggable. But again, due to the advances in science and biology, we now have two approved FDA therapies, one called adagrasib and the other one called sotorasib, that are allowing people to live better and live longer. So it's important to know the mutation so that your oncologist can potentially match you to targeted therapy. And again, there is a lot of hope. There's a lot of opportunity and optimism in the lung cancer space in 2024. So I want to thank you for your attention. I'm looking forward in a bit to some of the questions. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Sabari. That was just a wonderful presentation. A lot of information. I know there'll be questions to you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Sue, and Dr. Robert Sue is Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine, Division of Medical Oncology, USC Norris Comprehensive Cancer Center, and Dr. Hsu will be addressing the role of the pathologist reviewing your biomarker testing and with your healthcare team. Key questions to ask your healthcare team about biomarker testing and its benefits for your treatment choices, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and follow-up care and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Hsu.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Messner, for the introduction, and thanks to Longevity, Cancer Care, and sponsors for putting this together. The first topic I'll talk about is the role of the pathologist and reviewing biomarker testing with your healthcare team. So certainly, kind of as Dr. Chris and Dr. Sabari have kind of alluded to, lung cancer treatment is especially with the multiple modalities of treatment that there are, it's definitely a multidisciplinary effort. And so, pathologists are definitely a key role in that. They're, and the good analogy is that they kind of provide a map as to how we will manage treatment. So as medical oncologists, we kind of can help guide patients towards the treatment. But in order to have an idea of what treatment we are going to give, especially now where we have all these different options and different types of treatment, we need to have, pathologists have a key role in providing us with that map. And so as what Dr. Chris had kind of talked about earlier, many times this starts with a biopsy of the tissue, whether this is from a bronchoscopy or a scope, whether a patient goes for upfront surgery. But these are important because they help characterize what the lung cancer is. So today's topic is obviously on non-small cell lung cancer, but there is a minority of cases, 15%, that could be small cell lung cancer. And so that's one of the things that we can distinguish is between non-small cell lung cancer and small cell lung cancer. And then within non-small cell lung cancer, we can help differentiate even further between adenocarcinoma, which is a more common version of non-small cell lung cancer, and squamous cell carcinoma. And for years, that's kind of how we characterized non-small cell lung cancer. But now that's not sufficient given the many new treatments that we have. And so a key aspect to kind of knowing the type of lung cancer that we have is molecular testing that we kind of discussed a little bit in terms of next generation sequencing, where we can look at the DNA and the RNA of the cancer. And so from this, as we kind of alluded to earlier, we can find different biomarkers. As Dr. Sabari mentioned, a couple of common biomarkers, the mutations that we look for are EGFR, ALK, KRAS is also another one that we look for as well. But also another aspect that we consider is as was alluded to, given we have immunotherapy options, is PD-L1 or programmed death ligand 1, and looking to see what the percentage of that is, as that could help be a predictive marker as to how a patient may respond to immunotherapy. And so this kind of goes into the next aspect about key questions to ask your healthcare team about biomarker testing, its benefits for your treatment choices. And given that we have so many more options now in 2024 with the advancements in non-small cell lung cancer, as Dr. Sabari mentioned, the first thing is, do we find a biomarker? And especially, in certain populations, such as never smokers, younger patients, there is a high prevalence for finding a biomarker in which that is notable. Another aspect is, do we have sufficient testing? As Dr. Chris had mentioned in the beginning, unfortunately, sometimes with the amount of tests that we have to do for next generation sequencing, there's that possibility where there's not enough tissue from that, small biopsy that was done to do all the tests that we needed. And if you have a patient who's a never smoker and has a high probability of having that targeted actionable mutation, it might be the best interest to do another biopsy, as painful as that might be, to wait and go through another biopsy. And then also, the other question that, now this leads to is, what does it mean in terms of sort of therapy? Is this like a single therapy, combination therapy? What sort of modalities? So if we find that a patient has, you know, one of these biomarkers, possibly a pill such as an ALK-positive non-small cell lung cancer could be sufficient. But, you know, if a patient has EGFR mutation, it could be a pill. But now, you know, with the latest advances, it could be an antibody infusion or injection, or it could be the pill and chemotherapy. These things are things that, as we kind of advance in the field, are things that are, you know, kind of being more complex, but things that are important questions to answer and have further conversations about. And then I think another aspect that I also wanted to mention in terms of biomarker testing is, you know, say you have a patient who does have that actual mutation, has EGFR mutation or has ALK mutation. They get their pill, their targeted therapy to begin, but they unfortunately end up having a circumstance of progression of their disease. A good question to ask when you're in that scenario is it necessary to repeat that biomarker testing? We're coming to learn more and more that, in particularly with some of these actionable mutations, that there are patterns of acquired mutations. And this could be very helpful information, as, you know, there may not be a specific target for that acquired mutation, but there are clinical trials out there that, you know, the patient could be a candidate for. And so it's also an important question to ask these days, I think, if you do have that unfortunate circumstance of progression, whether or not you need to do another biopsy to see if the biology of your lung cancer has changed. And so the final kind of topic that I want to discuss is guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepare a list of questions, follow-up care, and discussion of open notes. And so I think one of the silver linings of COVID-19 was the kind of the advancement of telemedicine and the use of telemedicine. And I think there are some benefits to telemedicine. You know, with telemedicine, it allows, you know, patients and their families to get additional insights of care. So, you know, I live in California, and, you know, instead of, you know, patients, if they want to get additional insight, instead of having to drive 6-7 hours to Northern California, they can do telemedicine with, you know, with and be able to get additional insight of care. It also allows opportunities for additional loved ones, if they want to hear about the kind of the care, which is important, because I think with lung cancer, there's just so much information, and it's very difficult for one person to be able to absorb all this information. And so with telehealth and the ability to have other family members listen in, this will allow, you know, better understanding in terms of how to manage the care for the patients. And I think in terms of prepared list of questions, I think so Longevity has on the website has a good list of kind of questions for both newly diagnosed patients and for when I'm deciding on treatments. But kind of, I think it's important to be able to write these out on a sheet of paper or a notebook. Kind of when you're newly diagnosed, some of the important questions to ask are, you know, what type of lung cancer do I have? Do I have any specific biomarkers? What stage of the lung cancer? Is it just confined in the lung, or is it spread outside of the lung? You know, and then what is my treatment plan and what combinations of treatment there might be? And I also think another thing that's really important in all of this is to, you know, really utilize the resources that are available at the cancer center that you're getting your care at. For example, at USC, we have a really strong kind of lung navigation program. So we have a nurse navigator who helps reinforce education, if patients have questions, kind of can directly send messages through cell phone throughout the week. And it will help with reinforcement for education, because, you know, certainly, as you know, the benefit, you know, the amazing advance that we made in the lung cancer field has been remarkable, but at the same time, it's become very complex and understandably very difficult, I think, for patients to understand everything that's going on. So certainly being able to utilize, you know, the resources that you have, you know, along with organizations such as Longevity and Cancer Care are important. And thank you again for having me, and look forward to listening and answering your questions.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sue. That was just a wonderful presentation, a lot of information. And I think the point that you make about the telehealth, telemedicine is so important, that families can have, you know, family members listen and not have to travel miles and miles to hear information, that they can actually participate via telehealth, telemedicine appointments. And so thank you so much. And now, before we take the questions, I'm going to ask Nikki Martin first to speak. And Nikki is the Senior Director of Precision Medicine Initiatives Longevity Foundation. And Ms. Martin will be discussing Longevity Foundation's free programs and services and the Lung Cancer Helpline information about the helpline and as well as their Longevity Foundation, what it does and everything. So it's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Martin.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mesner, and hi, everyone. Thank you for being here today. I'd like to thank Dr. Chris, Dr. Sabari, and Dr. Sue for your talks, which were chock full of really helpful information on biomarkers and biomarker testing, which is so critical for patients in making sure their diagnosis is complete. So I represent Longevity Foundation. We are a nonprofit organization like Cancer Care, and our focus is on people with lung cancer. We support research, policy advocacy, and we provide a number of services for people with lung cancer to support your quality of life and help you and your caregivers, your family, your friends that are involved in your care to learn about the options you have for your care. So I want to take a couple of minutes to talk about the resources that Longevity offers to support people with lung cancer and their families. One of the most important tools we provide is the Longevity Lung Cancer Helpline. And this is a free phone line where you can talk with experts who really understand what it's like to deal with lung cancer. They're trained social workers, and this is offered, in partnership with Cancer Care. Those people are here to listen, answer your questions, and give you advice or support, point you in the direction of other resources whenever you need it. So the Lung Cancer Helpline can be reached at this phone number, 1-844-360-5864. And there's also an email address you could write to get connected to them. So that's info@longevity, L-U-N-G-E-V-I-T-Y. That's the name of my organization, longevity.org, O-R-G. So I hope that you tap into that phone line if you need it. I'd also like to quickly mention that Longevity offers free Zoom meetups virtual meetups for patients and caregivers. And these are offered throughout the week. And if you know your biomarker, we have meetups designed to support people within a specific biomarker group. These are great opportunities to connect with others who are going through similar experiences, and they're hosted by a nurse navigator who works here at Longevity and is fantastic. So you can use these meetups as a way to not just share your story, but also ask questions and just really feel listened to and supported. And so all of these free services and more can be found at our website, which is longevity.org, under the support services section. I also want to mention that we have numerous booklets and fact sheets about biomarker testing and helping you communicate with your doctor or nurse about biomarker testing. So I encourage you to find those educational tools on our website as well. And some of them are written in Spanish. So they have been translated into Spanish. And finally, I'd like to invite you to our Hope Summit in Bethesda, Maryland, May 2 through 4. So next year at the first weekend of May. This is an incredible event where patients and caregivers come together to share, learn, and build lasting connections Last year, I think we had around 400 people attend. And for first-time attendees in the United States, we have travel grants available. So you can check out our website for more information on that. Thank you so much for this opportunity to share some of our resources with you, and I hope that you'll take advantage of what our organization provides. Thank you. We're here to help you every step of the way.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Buffett. Right. And indeed, this is an amazing resource. We hope that you will all take advantage of it. Longevity Foundation has been around for a long time. We partner with them on every single program that we do on lung cancer-related topics. And so you'll be hearing about them on all the programs that we do, of course, going forward. And so thank you so much. And I'm just going to say a word about Cancer Care Services, and then we'll move on to the questions. But I do want to comment about it. So Cancer Care also offers free programs and services. So between the two of us, we definitely have lots of services for you to take advantage of. Those services are provided by oncology social workers. So we provide people with practical and financial assistance with online support groups, and also with a lot of different other resources that we offer. We also offer our hope line, 800-813-4673. So one can call that number at a time and speak with one of our oncology social workers, and visit our website at www.cancercare.org. And we're here, of course, to help you every step of the way. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. I'm going to ask Regina to explain to all of you how to queue up the questions. Regina.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So a question for Dr. Savari. From a registrant, where is AI playing a role in with genetic testing?
Caroline, it cut out. I apologize.
Oh, sorry.
What was the first part of the question?
Is AI playing a role in genetic testing?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal question. It's actually a very deep question. AI is essentially an algorithm where we can put data in as a machine learning opportunity, and using an image of the histopathology of the slide architecture, we do have modalities and programs now that can help tell us what the likely mutation is. But again, this is from us training the algorithm, for training the AI program in order to identify different mutations. Now, I don't think this yet will replace next-generation sequencing, but it does in the future have an ability for us to have a more rapid turnaround time, right? Turnaround time for plasma testing of genetics is about 5 to 7 days, whereas tissue is on average 2 to 3 weeks. Hopefully in the future, if we take an image of a slide, a pathology slide, and we can run it through an algorithm and understand the mutation, that could be 24, 48 hours. So I do think there'll be a role, not only for genetic testing, but also for potential biomarker testing to help guide drug development. And we're actually starting to see this as a biomarker on some trials. Most recently, TROP2, an antibody drug conjugate, used an AI biomarker to suggest response.
Excellent. Thank you so much. These are great questions. And the next question for Dr. Fu, should molecular testing always be ordered in response to non-small cell lung cancer diagnosis?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I think for a long time, you know, it was just predominantly used in stage 4 lung cancer. But, something that's come up in the last few years has been increased indications for using targeted therapies, immunotherapies in early stage lung cancer. So patients who are getting surgeries, patients who are getting radiation, and then to either use the targeted therapy or immunotherapy before or after their treatment. And so really, by and large, I would say at this point, I would say that really all patients should be getting biomarker testing regardless of stage.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Another question. The doctor, so is tumor mutation burden considered a biomarker?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, it's a biomarker that will show up in reports, and there is an indication for like kind of a pan tumor indication for using if there's a tumor mutation burden that's high over 10 to be used to use immunotherapy. However, we've kind of learned in the current non-small cell lung cancer treatment that doesn't really play a factor, and in fact, you know, the actual mutations are that we find are much more important, along with the PD-L1, and more predictive of response than to use a tumor mutational burden.
Thank you. Dr. Sabari, what is the difference between genetics and genomics?
Yeah, so, you know, genetics, interestingly, is the sort of study of gene. And, you know, when we talk about genetics, we can talk about, you know, familial mutations. We call those germline. You know, those are gene mutations that we inherit from mom and dad and have a risk of passing on to our children. And then we can also talk about somatic mutations, gene mutations. Those are, you know, mutations that are acquired from the environment. And, you know, really it's somatic mutations that are the most commonly type of mutation or most common type of mutation seen in lung cancer. We are starting to elucidate and better understand some germline mutations. So, for example, there's a very rare EGFR germline mutation occurring in less than 1% of patients. So this should be done and should be considered in clinical practice, especially if you have a family history of cancer in a maternal or paternal line. Genomics is more of a broad terminology, and it's the study of all of genetics, essentially. And again, talking to your clinician and making sure that you're aware of your biomarker, your driver mutation is critical. Because without knowing that, you can't get the best possible therapy. You can't unlock targeted therapies, and you can't have the opportunity for hopefully many clinical trials that may come down the line and may become standard of cares in the future.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And another question for Dr. Su. Are there any other known genes that are used in targeted therapy besides the commonly known ones like EGFR, KRAS, ALK, et cetera?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of, as Dr. Sabari said, there's 11 different ones that we actually have actual mutations for. And so other ones that, you know, I've personally run into are ROS1, RET, MET exon 14 skip mutations. And that's actually kind of a good point to bring up because, you know, I think one of the good questions to ask, you know, your clinician when you're about the biomarker testing is, you know, was this kind of a comprehensive genomic profiling, as in did they test for kind of a wide array of genes, or was this only a select number of genes? Because if you only test for a select number of genes, some of these other ones that I just described that are seen in like 1% of non-small cell lung cancer may not be identified, and, you know, it could be they could be missing out on a targeted therapy. And then also it's also important, you know, in that we are also studying other, you know, there are other clinical trials out there that are studying new kind of new possible mutations, like, you know, for example, KRAS G12C, we have targeted therapy for with adagrasib and sotorasib, but, you know, there's, for example, you know, early stage studies trying to look at KRAS G12D, for example. So it's actually also useful in the sense that you can always consider a clinical trial for a patient if they happen to have one of these kind of lesser, you know, uncommon mutations.
Excellent, thank you. And I do some takeaways here. So I'm going to ask each of our physicians to provide a takeaway from today's program. So I'll start with Dr. Sabari. If you could provide a takeaway from today's program for the participants.
Sure, thank you, Dr. Mesner. I think my number one takeaway would be that, you know, there's a lot of hope a lot of opportunity. And I want, you know, folks on the call, family members on the call, to stay optimistic because there's a, you know, revolution occurring in the development of not only targeted therapies, but also immunotherapies and novel therapies. And understanding what makes your cancer tick, the biomarker, is going to be critical to allow you and your team to select the best possible therapy for you and your care.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Sue, if you'd like to also provide a takeaway.
Yeah, I think the major takeaway is, you know, today we kind of gave you a lot of information and kind of a sense as to how complex the field in lung cancer is. But just to highlight that, you know, there are these resources like, you know, like Longevity and Cancer Care, you know, along with the resources that you have at your institution, that, you know, that it's understandable to feel overwhelmed that a lot of this information, but to not let that, you know, dampen your spirits, to feel that, you know, there's hope in that, you know, there are a lot of these options, and to really rely on your loved ones to kind of help you in terms of guiding your care for lung cancer.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Ms. Barton, would you like to add anything as well?
I just want to say that there is so much important information shared. Biomarker testing is a critical piece of, like I said before, completing the diagnosis, and Longevity has the right resources to help you make sure that you ask the right questions of your providers at the right times during your diagnosis to ensure that you get that level of biomarker testing. And so please rely on us. Please reach out to us because we're here to help you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I want to thank all of our participants because you've really been just an amazing audience today. I mean, although we've done a program on this topic before, I think the topic has never really been so thoroughly covered. And I think between Longevity Foundation and Cancer Care, there's so many resources for all of you on the call today, so many more resources than there were a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago. And so please do take advantage of all of these resources. Work with your healthcare team and be sure that you are getting also the state-of-the-art institution. I'm going to ask actually Dr. Savari and Dr. Sue to comment on the fact of being at a state-of-the-art institution where you're getting your treatment for your lung cancer. Dr. Savari, do you want to go first on that one?
Sure. You know, I think, you know, it's interesting of where you get care, I think, matters. And a lot of community oncology practices are phenomenal. And, you know, it's important that you feel comfortable, but also you get all the information that you need and you have state-of-the-art care. I think it is always helpful to get a second opinion, depending on where you're located and if there's an academic center. Not that you need to stay at the academic center for that therapy, but to have a second eyes and ears, a second set of people review your case, you know, hear about it at a tumor board, a board meeting, to sort of go over the ins and outs of your care, I think are important. A lot of my patients are being followed in the community as well by me, more peripherally as a consultant or a consultation on the side. And I think that could be very helpful because at each fork in the road, at each scan, it's helpful to touch base to see, are there opportunities? Are there trials available? Is there anything else changing in the field that I should know about for my own disease?
Excellent point. And Dr. Sue, do you want to add to that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say I agree with Dr. Savari. I mean, certainly, you know, especially patients in terms of who are in more rural areas or areas with difficulties with access. I mean, many of those oncologists are forced to learn everything in oncology and everything in hematology and practice that. And it's impossible to be able to know every single in and out of the field. And so I think the benefit of being able to do something like telemedicine or being able to drive to see somebody in an academic center just to get that like latest news because or that clinical trial that your community oncologist may not be aware of, I think it's really important. And I think even if you do live in a big city, you know, for example, such as, you know, I live in Los Angeles, I mean, you know, we have between the different cancer centers in Los Angeles, we have different clinical trials. We all do not run the same clinical trials. So, you know, what we might have available at University of Southern California might be different than what UCLA has, for example. And so I think it doesn't hurt. And many times we all know each other. There's a lot of collaboration. I don't think it hurts to go, see another. I think it's great to see another oncologist. I'm always happy from my end to always collaborate with other oncologists to be able to help get the best care for the patient. So I certainly echo those sentiments in terms of trying to get kind of a second care opinion slash, maybe a second oncologist to maybe help, in terms of improving, in terms of getting a better sense as to the best treatments out there and the options for treatment that are available.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And a lot of people want to rush to treatment right away, but I guess what we're hearing is that you can't wait a year to get treatment. On the other hand, you can. I'm going to ask our physicians to comment on that in terms of, people often do feel an urgency to get treatment right away, but could you each comment, Dr. Sue and Dr. Savari, on that one?
An important point after you, Dr.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, that's an important point. I mean, sometimes there are times where patients are symptomatic, and so there are instances where we have to give systemic therapy. We typically give patients chemotherapy, and while patients continue to wait for their biomarker testing. But, I still think that, a lot of times still, I think there's still that ability for us to still, be able to find those options for treatment for those patients. Even if patients are symptomatic, we sometimes have to start them on some sort of systemic therapy to control their symptoms.
And Dr. Sabari?
Yeah, and I agree. I think there's a lot of, anxiety, fear, stress, rightfully so, at the time of the new diagnosis. And I usually talk to patients about emotional sort of crisis versus physical or visceral crisis that's related to disease. And, like we just heard from Dr. Zhu, that if somebody has systemic symptoms, shortness of breath, cough that is severe, I think starting chemotherapy before having the biomarkers back is correct. But I do that maybe, a handful of times a year. Oftentimes I'm able to coach patients to say, look, let's wait for the results, the genetic information, the PD-L1 information, because then we can select the best possible therapy for you. And when patients know that and they feel supported and we can start to mitigate some of their symptoms with other non-treatment measures, I think they feel a lot more confident. So, rushing into a treatment sometimes is needed, but many times is not needed. And I think getting the correct information, as well as getting that second opinion, may be more helpful, may allow your journey to be much more smoother.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank our speakers. You've just been phenomenal, I have to say. And our participants also for asking such really great questions. And I do want to remind all of you that this is an hour program, of course, but I hope you've learned a lot in this program, and I hope that you will take what you've learned and go back to treating healthcare team and will use what you learned and go back to your healthcare team with what you've learned and ask your healthcare team the questions that you asked perhaps on the program today. It's really important to get as much information as you can. That's really so vitally important and all along the way. So Longevity Foundation is there for you. Cancer Care is there for you. You do not have to do this alone. You really need to be constantly looking up, working with others to get information so that you can really get the best care possible. That's really what's most important. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all just a very fine day. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.